Podcasting 2.0 for December 12th, 2020. This is episode number 15. And hey, baby, we're with the band. It's dreary all around. But it is a Friday. Time once again for a meeting of the board for Podcasting 2.0, podcastindex.org. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the man who put the auto in autocomplete, the developer dynamo, Mr. Dave Jones.
What's the band? Where's the Ringo?
We're with the band. We're with the band. Yeah, this is something. First of all, how you doing, man?
I'm sad.
You're sad?
I'm extremely depressed.
What's wrong?
Nobody appears to like us anymore.
What do you mean by that?
We had two donations this week.
The honeymoon is over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the cold, hard... We're facing the cold, hard reality now of
the dark winter.
Yes, it's dark winter. Yeah, it's dark winter.
Well, then let me say right off the bat, if... this is a value for value project, the podcastindex.org and the accompanying podcast. And if you want to support it, if you get any value out of what you're seeing, maybe you're an app developer, maybe you're just a podcast listener, maybe you just listen to this podcast, who knows? Maybe you just like free speech and that kind of stuff and fighting against cancel culture. Put that into a number. Just keep it in your head. Go to podcastindex.org and hit the big red donate button and send us some value. We'd really appreciate that. We did get a nice sponsored value return from RSS.com.
Yeah, totally. And I put that into the donation segment because it was already so short.
Wait a minute, that's one of the two?
Yeah. Let's not talk about that right now. You got to save it.
Okay.
No, it's not one of the two. That's number three. It's like two and a half, yeah.
That was in pod news. And I do want to say, you know, you're sad. I'm a little bit irked.
Oh, yeah.
Because James Cridland at podnews.net, he has a podcast. Mm-hmm. Which is that called the Pod News Podcast? Is that what that is?
There's that, and then he's got a new one called Podland.
I don't know which one I was listening to. Maybe it was Podland. And all of a sudden... He's like stealing our material. He's doing hot namespace talk. Excuse me. Yeah. That's not okay. He's like horning in on our business, Dave.
Yeah, no. There's only one podcast that gets to talk about namespaces for an hour.
Seriously. I mean, we are the porn hub of namespace.
A porn hub. That's so appropriate, right? By the way.
I know. I know. I saw Ryan Gentry from Lightning Labs. He posted in one, I think, Tales from the Crypt tribe on Sphinx Chat. It says, does anyone know anyone over at Pornhub asking for a friend?
Yeah. It's like, okay, Visa and MasterCard killed Pornhub.
Yeah, exactly.
Payment processing.
Let's get some lightning in there.
My immediate reaction was, well, get ready for Bitcoin 100,000.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly. Going up, baby.
And Tina, right away, she's like, oh, Bitcoin, there's your answer. That's what you got to do.
That was funny.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Keep her on social media.
Oh, yeah. She knows, man. She knows.
She needs to send him an invoice. That's good material.
Reminder.
That's consulting.
She should send us when she can send us a lightning invoice, we'll pay it.
Yeah.
Right. Which she can. She has a wallet. So.
Does she?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She says, awesome. I want a wallet. Okay. Here you go. Yeah. What she needs is a podcast app wallet. That's what she needs. And
that's true.
I want to ask everyone who's listening to this in a lightning-enabled app to crank up the value sliders, please. Peg that to the right.
They go to 11.
Go to 11. Whatever your value setting should be. And I was thinking, now that we have Dreb Scott doing community chapters for this show, which is dynamite. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. I saw it. The one I saw earlier, the chapters were rolling through, and it was like just links to pay, like iframes with pages in it. So you could scroll. It was awesome. It was that article, Substackerati.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Last week.
Yeah,
it was in there. You could just read the article right in the app.
I don't know. I mean, you know. Yeah. How cool is that?
You pause, I love you it. Pause, pause the podcast, read the article, then unpause it. Of course, that article is like 500,000
words. Right, quite an article, yeah. And if you're wondering how you can witness all this beauty, go to newpodcastapps.com. That's where you can find all the apps and services, hosting companies that are podcasting 2.0 compliant and certified as such.
I just had an idea. Okay, if that happens, you're sitting there listening to a podcast and the chapter comes through and it has something you can read or something like that, you gotta have some way to have like a lightning payment in the thing so you could like help the person the stuff you're linking to.
So, okay, two things. And we'll just get this out of the, we have guests hanging, so I don't want to take too long. But I had dinner with Paul from Sphinx Chat. He was in Austin the other day. And so first off, yes, what I'd like to do with this show right now, since Dreb Scott is doing our chapters, I'm going to get him a node and we should cut him in on the value block for what, 5%?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Should we do that?
That's great.
Yeah. So we can also show how this actually works and and have him enjoy some of that. I mean, that's the whole point is, you know, we're eating our own dog food here. And coming back to what you just said. We're with the band was something that Paul identified at our dinner. He said, what's happening with the community chapters that people can add to it, but also in Sphinx Chat with the boosts and with the chat itself, that's all additional content that is added by the listeners. I like to call them producers. And it makes you feel like you're with the band. And so Dreb Scott is truly with the band right now. And the amount of creativity he can put in with still very rudimentary tools is quite astounding. And what I see him do on No Agenda, where he's doing the same, I'm also going to put him in the value block for that show, is he'll get images, appropriate images from No Agenda Art Generator, and put those in topics that we're talking about stuff. Because most of those images come up from a topic. They're just not picked as the album art. So now he's putting that in. So now that now also brings in the other artists. I mean, who are with the band. And they get to be a part of the podcast. It's really mind-blowing. And I want to have that for clips. There's just so much stuff that we could add to it. And it's going to be pretty app-specific the way it is now. Unless or until, you know, every child born is provided a lightning node ID at birth, which is really what I think should happen. I'm going to lobby for this.
No,
yes.
No, every that is not a,
every child no. needs a lightning node ID.
Yeah. And you just barcode it onto your forehead.
Well, that's fine. As long as it's not on the forehead or on your right hand, then it's not the mark of the beast. It's a good thing.
Yeah, everybody gets a lightning node, and here's the number, and we're going to tattoo it onto you. There's nothing wrong with this.
So, and this is maybe something we'll talk with our guests about. It kind of flows into what is the, and God, I can't believe I'm using the term, the deep data file, which is up for discussion you're not liking it. Oh, you're not liking the deep data file. Well, hit me, brother.
I don't know. What rule it is. It's the rules for standards.
We need to go back to the rule book. Yeah.
You know, and look, I get it. I totally understand that the name doesn't match up with necessarily all the things it does. The problem, though, is that it really doesn't matter what you call it. That is one of the rules for standard makers. It totally doesn't matter what you call it.
Right. Then I'm misunderstanding the issue. I thought it wasn't just about a name. Here's what I feel is happening. And I could be wrong, and it's not an accusatory statement. I feel there's a push to have an external data file that will contain all kinds of extra goodies. And one day I'm going to wake up and it's going to be JSON. That's what I feel.
Well, it already is JSON. You're living this dream.
So. Okay. So I knew it was a backdoor to JSON somehow.
It's JSON. It's JSON all the way down.
But I do see the value in having the ability now. And it all depends on what's easier. Is it easier to have podcast apps know when to refresh the feed and get new information? Or is it easier to have a couple of files in there that are static that the app will just reread every single time it fires up for an episode? That seems to be the main crux of the issue.
I mean, the chapters file is already basically that. It is the quote unquote deep data file, and that's what it is. And so that's what, like, Daniel is saying, is that he thinks that the name chapters does not properly reflect what is.
No, well, I don't care about the file. I don't care about the name. That doesn't bother me.
That's where I'm at too. And he likened it to choosing the name podcast for the podcast namespace. I think that is different. That is something that's sort of external as far as the way it works in the world. And I mean, it's a name that people need to understand what right, the thing even is.
But this came out of a confusion saying that Clips is identical information to chapters, or did I misunderstand?
Well, I think you think sound bites. Yeah,
sound bites. Sorry. Yeah.
My thing is that when I say it totally doesn't matter what you name it, I don't mean that it doesn't matter what you call it ever, like in all circumstances. What I mean, and I'm probably not making this clear either, is that it doesn't matter what you call it when you get down into the technical weeds.
Mm-hmm.
So like we use things called, TCP/IP is a meaningless term. It's an acronym for something. And most people don't need to know. It doesn't matter what it even stands for. It just does a thing and we know what it does. The name chapters, it doesn't matter because the only people referencing the name chapters who even need to know what it means are the people that are doing the protocol implementation. And so for those people, they just know that a chapters file has all these other things in it. And so it's just fine. I mean, you could call it block.
Okay. All right. Let me play this back to you. So the chapters file could be both chapters file and a sound bites file or just a sound bites file. It doesn't matter what it's called. That type of data will be in that file.
Well, it's less about the sound bites and more about other types of data like location. Now don't get, I didn't even want to bring that up because location tag is.
No, I got all hot and bothered listening to Cridland about it. So you might as well bring it up.
Yeah. No, it's the location tag is fine. It stands alone. It's going to be it. We got over the hump. But there is also an idea of putting a location points inside the chapters file. So if somebody was doing a podcast of like a walking tour,
then you could
put little podcast. And so at that point, it's like, well, it's not chapters anymore. It's something else. But my counterexample was bookmarks in a PDF. Bookmarks in a PDF, yes, they function as bookmarks, but they also have other things in them. Like you can put a full JavaScript code into a bookmark,
which I have.
Yeah, and it resizes the page when you click on it, changes font, does all this crazy crap. So, and we still call them bookmarks. I'm just saying that at a technical level, you don't have to change the name of a thing just because it doesn't necessarily match the functionality of the thing. As long as the name sort of encompasses the idea or the goal, that's fine. I just don't think it's that big of a deal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was confused because I didn't realize it was just about what it's called. I thought it was much deeper. So I'm sorry I even brought it up. I'm sorry I ruined your day. Damn, man.
I'm just pissed now. Thanks a lot.
Okay. I'm
not pissed. I'm happy.
I know you're not. Before we it was great planning and talking to Paul. An update on that front, the Breeze work continues. I have no idea when their drop date is for a wallet whether it's wallet with podcast capabilities or a standalone app. I'm not quite sure, but they are developing and they have code out on GitHub. Did you see that code? Did you look at it at all?
I did. I linked over to it and looked at it for a while. I totally had no idea what I was
looking at. I was going to say, could you figure it out?
Yeah, I could lie to you and tell you I was all over it. But
it looked real structured to me.
Yeah, I think it looks fine. Yeah, it looks just fine. It
looked beautiful. Yeah. We also talked about nodes and stuff like that. And I've been talking to Graham at voltage.io because we witnessed kind of an overload of our nodes with the amount of transactions. And he confirmed, he said, I think, you know, podcastindex.org has the most transactions of anyone right now on the Lightning Network, which is quite bizarre. And something happened because, you know, it automatically upgrades to, you know, more CPU. And we're actually going to get a dedicated setup from him. And so channels started to close, and then we were missing key send payments. And
hey, now that can't work.
No, and I was like, and even closed our channel to Sphinx Chat. I'm like, oh, this is, what am I going to do? And even though it's discouraged in the Lightning documentation, which I didn't realize until I was told later that it's
there's Lightning documentation.
Yes, and there's a thing that says it's really quite not done to request inbound liquidity on Twitter, which I did.
Oh,
and, okay. And of course, you know, we got like $15,000 or $20,000 worth of inbound liquidity from some great partners and peers routing. So
you're a rule breaker, man.
I, what can I say? All right. Our guest today, we're invited.
By the way, Daniel J. Lewis, I love you. Don't hate me.
You are the worst. No one hates anybody, but we're honest. You know, we got no time for politics. We really don't. We got no money for politics. How about that?
No money for politics. Sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
Well, no, you invited our guests, so why don't you give them an intro?
Oh, John and Justin from Transistor, welcome to the show.
Oh, damn. Great intro, Dave.
You caught me off guard. You threw it to me. I had no idea. John and Justin, welcome to the podcast.
There you go.
I can't do that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
You're that guy.
John Buta, yeah. Justin Jackson, Transistor FM.
Yeah. Dave, I can see why you signed up for this gig, because those intros, man, I would sign up to hear those all day long.
Doing a podcast with Adam, I mean, it's just like you just turn on the fire hose and it's great.
You put the auto and autocomplete. I mean, yeah. That is
well, I mean, this is a new feature Dave's been working on. Is it done yet? You got an autocomplete endpoint, don't you?
There should be there's going to be a chapter whenever Dreb Scott puts the chapters together for this episode. Yeah. It's one of them is going to be called Dave is Sad. And the other one is going to be...
it was Sad Puppy Face.
Yeah, and the other one's going to be called, Is It Done Yet? That's every week there's going to be one called, Is It Done Yet? No, it is not done yet.
Okay.
It is not done. I've got a curve. I've got some curveballs.
But see, this is when I know that Dave is... like he's a little bored is when all of a sudden they're like this new feature. It's like, oh, I'm doing this now. Like, holy crap. Am I right?
Justin and John, are you... are y'all both developers?
No. In our partnership, John is the developer. So this is making me look real bad, because now he's going to expect a similar Adam Curry treatment every time he releases something new.
Justin, just talk like you know what you're talking about.
Exactly. That's what I do.
That's what we do every week.
All right. So John, come on in here. You're the developer of the two with the deep voice.
Yep, that's me.
Go figure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say when Adam asked me if that was true, if I was bored. I was going to be like, well, yeah, John, I mean, of course, that's what happens. You do stuff and you start working on infrastructure stuff and it gets boring, and then you just have to like shake it up and do something.
I can relate. I've had multiple projects going at once, and then I just switch between them until I can finish one.
Yeah.
Justin knows.
Yeah.
So Justin... Yeah,
to the frustration of everybody else.
Yeah.
So Justin and John together founded Transistor. You say Transistor or Transistor FM?
I always say Transistor.fm. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like putting their domain extension in there, but for me, that's like free marketing. It's Transistor.fm is the site, but it's legally just Transistor.
I like this name because for me it triggers all kinds of radio visions of a transistor radio that may not have even been the intent behind the name. But give us a bit of the backstory, because it's a relatively young hosting company. I think a couple of years, right?
That's right. Yeah. John, do you wanna give the early part?
Yeah, I can try to give the short history. Let's see. So we launched officially in August of 2018, I think. Is that right?
Justin? Yeah, August 2nd.
Yeah. Okay. So August 2018, but the actual code had started in the end of 2017. I was working for Cards Against Humanity, and they were doing a big holiday event. And one of those was a podcast they were releasing. And I was a developer there and had previously worked on a podcasting platform. I'd been kind of thinking about doing another one, building my own again, by myself. And so with that, I had the opportunity to sort of build something simple just for that one podcast, which then eventually spun out into Transistor. So, they were nice enough to let me work on side projects, which they kind of let everyone do. And then I had known Justin for years back from meeting him at XOXO down in Portland, or over in Portland, whichever direction you want to go. And we've been talking about doing something together for a long time. I sort of wanted to do Transistor on my own, based on just previous experience with a co-founder. but the more I thought about it, I was like, I don't have any idea how to market this thing, right? So it's just me, a developer. I would basically do nothing to market it. And Justin had kind of wanted to do something starting in 2018. So we decided to partner up and made it legal. And kind of been going from there. We went full time last summer, I believe.
Yeah, almost a year exactly. To a year after we launched officially, so August 2019, and bootstrapped the whole thing. That's a pretty generous retelling, actually, because when John told me he was working on this, I begged him. I said, John, you gotta let me partner up with you on this. We gotta do this together.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention the desperation, but
perfectly played. Perfectly played.
Now, why? So, John, you're a developer, so you liked what you were doing. You developed it. Was there did you see that there was an opportunity in the market, or was the market so small? Because there's a number of players out there. And Justin, why were you begging, man? What the hell were you thinking? Taking a vow of poverty, getting into podcasting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought there was still an opportunity. I know there were even 2 or 3 years ago a number of hosts. There's obviously more now, but I thought there was a huge potential in podcasting. I just had fun working on it previously and in a previous iteration for a different service. I liked the podcasting landscape. I liked kind of who was involved in it. I liked the open nature of it. It just seemed like there were pieces of like the original internet frontier still in podcasting. It was just a fun project to work on. All the customers are great to work with. People seem really excited about podcasting, and I had some previous knowledge of it and wanted to just build something up from scratch again, and one of those developer itches you got to scratch.
And Justin, you were begging to get in. What did you see?
I'd started a podcast in 2012, and I've always been in software, so on the product management side. And I used to have folks come to me all the time, between 2012, 2013, 2014, developers saying, oh, I got a great idea for podcasters. And I always said, don't build it, because the podcast market back then was mostly DIYers and hobbyists and, people that wanted to do things themselves. They didn't like paying for things. And the trend that I saw developing that got me more excited is you still had this indie podcast scene, but increasingly those folks were okay with paying for hosting and analytics and other things. But then you also had just way more mind share. So when I was in the coffee shop, people weren't just talking about what apps they were installing on their phone or what they were watching on Netflix. They started, you know, saying, hey, I'm listening to this new podcast. And it, like, when I heard it the first couple times in a coffee shop, it made me stop in my tracks. Like, what normals are talking about podcasts? Like, they figured out how to, you know, find a podcast app and
subscribe
to an RSS feed. Like, what is going on? And so, and all of these kind of big cultural touchstones, like Serial, and, you know, and then everything that happened after Serial, the New York Times publishing a podcasting op-ed every single week. It just felt like there's this burgeoning wave, and now, and then companies starting to invest in it, right? You had branded podcasts and even companies that I knew that, like Basecamp, which is a relatively small, you know, software company, they hired 2 full-time people and built a studio to have a little podcast, you know, set up.
Right.
That's at least $200,000 a year, maybe even more. It's like, wow, if they're willing to spend that much on, you know, hiring some podcasters, then spending, you know, $99 a month on podcast hosting might not be a stretch for them.
So do you, what is your target client base? I mean, it seems like you're offering everything. We take care of it. We make sure of you that your podcast is published on all the platforms and you got your stats. Is stats still a big draw for customers? Yeah. Is that the big one?
Yeah. To be honest, like, at first we thought our audience was going to be businesses, but it turns out that there's like the big draw is people searching, how do I start a podcast best podcast hosting?
Mm-hmm.
And
I see it right here. How to start a podcast, right on your menu. You sly little SEO devil, you.
Yes. Yeah.
that's all Justin.
But you know, there is a lot of people who want that kind of help, and so they're looking for a simple tool. People don't think about, like, most podcasters are not thinking about RSS. They're not thinking, all they're thinking about is, how do I get my audio out into the world? And whatever is the easiest or the most friendly or the most efficient way to do that is that's what they want. And so we have folks switching from Anchor, which is a free product, that switched to us just to get customer support. They
This is a big one. Yeah, it's a big one. I've heard a lot about this. That people really like the customer service.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think we do have a lot of businesses that sign up, and that's a great, you know, it's great to have those folks. But I think what John and I really dig is the indies. People just in their basement buy a microphone and have something to say and want to get it. Growing up, I always wanted to start my own talk radio, radio station. And I actually knew a guy that bought a radio station. He was a friend of my dad's. And I went up to him when I was a kid and said, how do I do that? Like, how do I own my own station? And he was like, well, it's millions of dollars, Justin.
Shut up, kid.
Or you can go, like, serve coffee for years and years and maybe get on the microphone. And the idea that now with, a $99 USB microphone, and then, you know, a service like Transistor, you can have your own talk radio station. That's an attractive idea to a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah, and the non-live nature of it, I think, it makes it attainable for a lot of people. They just like, well, if I mess up, hey, I'll just go back and clean it up later. And I don't have to have, you know, I don't have to have the terror of having live radio and that kind of thing that would make you shut down. It makes it a little bit more accessible for the average human to think that they can, you know, pull that off and not be embarrassed about what the final product looks like.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that you're talking about podcasting feeling like sort of early internet days. I totally agree with that because there's this, I remember back, oh gosh, this has probably been 20 years ago now or close to it. I was heavy writing a lot of assembly language at the time. And one of the things.
Were you in prison? What the hell were you thinking?
It's even worse. It was on Windows. It was assembly language on Windows. Using the MASM32 package is great. Mm. But one of the things that was so interesting to me about that whole thing, and I think probably a lot of, you know, sysadmin developer type people think this way, is that you could understand what you were doing. Like you could, one of the first things I wrote was a podcast downloader, and this podcasting was very extremely new at the time. And it was parsing the RSS feed and all that jazz. And you had to actually make the HTTP 1.1 call in the, you know, you're hand coding the protocol.
Were you doing this in assembly language?
Yeah, in assembly language. That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
And I still got the code. I would have posted it. It's kind of crazy. But you're making all the calls and that kind of stuff. And it felt fun to actually be able to like understand the protocols as they were being used. But, you know, and now today, most development is so many layers removed from the actual, you know, wire level protocols and the actual, you know, low underlying technology, that it's like, oh, I need to do this. I'll just go get a library and plug it in and I'll just, you know, that's fine. But then you don't have that sort of thrill of being able to kind of get in and really dig down deep and understand something to do it on a protocol level. But you still kind of have that in podcasting. It's fun. You get to parse the RSS and you get to do all these interesting coding challenges. It does feel like old internet.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of interesting things you can do around a very simple protocol, which is the RSS, which I really hope will stick around. I mean, this has its limitations, obviously. And
you know what? I heard a lot of over the past few days, people emailing even saying, can I do video with this? Because YouTube is like going to take my channel down. And I'm like, yes, yes, all this stuff works. It's there.
That's going to be an interesting, John and I have resisted doing video, but even a platform comparison between YouTube and podcasting and RSS it's kind of having its moment right now, because we've seen what the owned platform looks like. YouTube came in, they bought out a lot of indie video people at the beginning, they captured all that market, now they own it, and, you know, for a while, creators were happy to publish on there and have YouTube pay them ad share or whatever. But once somebody owns the means of distribution, so now the means of production that's been democratized. Everybody now has the ability to turn on a microphone or a camera and create their own stuff. But now what's being locked down is distribution. And again, you know, especially during the pandemic, some creators saw their YouTube ad share get cut, and, you know, all of a sudden the algorithm is no longer showing their stuff. And in podcasting with Spotify, we now have the same kind of risk. Is there's this big platform that wants to be the YouTube of audio. And I do think this is kind of a pivotal moment in podcasting. Are podcast creators going to go the same way as YouTubers and be owned by the platform, or are they going to keep their independence and figure out other ways of, you know, making the money work?
Well, that is partially up to you, partially up to the app developers, and partially up to us and I'll take some of that responsibility to get the word out there that there's an entire universe. We are making a difference. There's, you know, we're seeing the uptake in not only just apps that are integrating, who see the value in it. We'll see exactly how I think the experience is what it comes down to. And that's why you've always seen people have their favorite podcast app, because it has that one little feature they love. And sure, a lot of people are like, whatever Apple has is fine. But once they're introduced to that one extra feature they like, it could be as simple as a share. And features is where we're going to win initially. And money is where we're definitely going to move ahead, which brings me to podcasting 2.0, where you guys are, I think, as integrated and compliant as possible at this point. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah.
Because you guys, transcripts, of course, the lock tag, funding chapters, soundbite, and
we don't have all that stuff.
Actually. You don't have all of that.
We only have two of them.
Locked in funding.
We're as compliant as we can be technologically, because we don't right now have support for chapters.
Well, shame on you.
That was Adam's way of publicly shaming you.
Actually, I was looking at newpodcastapps.com, and it says that you have all those features. So I guess I was wrong.
I guess that's a way to light a fire under our ass, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's on the site, so you better have it quick. Good luck. Good luck, by the way.
I don't know which site that is. Yeah, so we do support locking and funding, and we do integrate with the podcast index API directly, so people can just submit with one click.
Very nice. Then what does your roadmap look like? Do you think you'll be supporting chapters and transcripts?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, transcripts, we have to build in a way for people to upload those. People often ask for auto transcription, which we'll have to tie into a different third-party service for that if we do that.
I think otter.ai may have an API that you can access for that.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of those things where we kind of want to do it right instead of do it fast.
So what can we do to help?
Well, I mean, you guys got to keep blazing trail. That's the whole point. Just because we're a few miles behind you, that doesn't mean you shouldn't keep blazing trail.
I guess maybe I mean it differently. So I realize with my developer hat on, which is is paper. I realize what, when chapters comes out and, it's like, oh, and here it is. And you just put this JSON to this file over here. I realize that, oh, wait a minute. That means you guys got to figure out a way internally to have yet another file that is hosted and loaded and linked, et cetera. And I know that takes some thought and some time to integrate that to have it work the right way. Moving forward, as we come up with stuff, do you have preferences from your end of the ecosystem? It's like, well, gee, if we could put it all in the RSS, that would be better because X, Y, and Z. Or we'd rather have all this stuff external. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for. How can we blaze the trail and not leave just ashes for you to sweep up?
I mean, I would personally prefer it not to be in the RSS feed just because those things get huge. I mean, if you stuffed the entire transcript into an RSS feed for episodes.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be what all the hosters said. Yeah.
Adding on external things like that to external URLs, I think, is probably the way to go.
This was said by, and I was reading this in something that Pod News had in their newsletter, and then I think Tom Rossi posted this too. It's a quote from Dave Zorob, I don't know how you pronounce his name. Charitable, and he said, closed versus open, as Spotify expands their suite of exclusive content and others like Amazon and Apple enter the fray, we'll begin to see more competition between closed platforms and the open RSS-based ecosystem. I believe the open ecosystem can continue to thrive. Competition is healthy after all, but the open ecosystem will need to continue to innovate as an industry to serve listeners, creators, and advertisers well. And I think I think that's right, because my response to that was, I mean, if you have a podcast that has all, like, if you just go ahead and extrapolate out to the end of phase two, and let's just say that we are of the namespace, and let's just say that we have location in there, we have person in there, we have named seasons in there, and we also have social media links in there. If you extrapolate out to the end of phase two and you have potentially 10 new tags that give you all this extra stuff, I mean, like, that blows away any closed platform. Spotify doesn't have all that stuff. Apple Podcast doesn't have all that stuff. Stitcher, none of them have that on their closed platforms. That paves the way for the open ecosystem to not just compete, but to actually just bypass. I mean, like, go miles ahead of any closed system that I know of.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, I think where we can actually help you is we're front lines. We've got customers coming to us every day that want to accomplish things. And, like named seasons is one of them. It's like, why can I only choose a number?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, this is a big one for us, too. And for NPR. Yeah. We're doing this.
I'm listening to Unfinished right now. And it's Unfinished, but it's their Short Creek season. But I to search for that in an app, it's like, right, which one is this? Is it, they're stuffing it into the episode title. It's not great. And so I think when folks on the ground level, like us, are interacting with customers and real podcasters, and they're saying, they're just trying to figure out how to get things done. How come I can't name a season?
Right.
Well, that's not possible right now. And to have folks like you that are opening up that possibility, you know, that's could be a big deal for us. That allows us to build features that people want.
Now, when you have customers saying, well, I want to be able to name it X, Y, or Z, and then we have the, and that'll be in phase two, we have the seasons tag, a season tag, but that will likely require one of, you know, five or six different apps that are truly compliant with it. And I don't know, and Dave, chime in, if this will break or just not show up at all on like the Apple Podcast app. You know, so how do you, can you sell that to your clients by saying, well, it's new and here's the apps that do it, but it's not the Apple app.
Yeah. I mean, there's already this mess in podcasting. So we're always having to explain, you know, why can't I add a private podcasting is huge for us. How come I can't add it to Spotify? Well, sorry,
that's not
Spotify,
private. It's the opposite of private. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
It's a tricky thing too, when you're building out an interface for someone to even manage their podcast with us. Right. So if we support named seasons, but Apple doesn't support that, you then have to have like a different input for especially for Apple season numbers, and then you have another input for the named one. And then,
I'm working on that, by the way. That's one of the I'm hopefully presenting the namespace to the Apple Podcast team in January.
Cool.
So we'll see.
Oh man, how can we help with that?
You need to show up
with a mob.
Well, show more podcasts that have this in their feed. I mean, that's really the way. It's the chicken and the egg, you know. And my next question to you guys would be a little bit further down the road. Are you open to integrating with other parties who do like Lightning Node specific stuff, so that you can offer that to your customers, but it would be a third party that's doing that? Or is that something you want to do yourself? Are you interested at all when it comes to the real time payments?
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I don't know what you're talking about.
Great. Yes. I love that.
Success.
Maybe.
Hey man, I looked at your Wikipedia. What the hell's wrong with you? Hey,
just say yes. Just say yes, John. You don't have to know what it
I'm
means.
Sorry. Okay.
I didn't even know there was a Lightning documentation until 15 minutes ago.
There certainly is. So, you guys need to see this, because we have there's a tag, that an experimental tag, but it'll be in phase two. It's called the value block, and in that block are digital payment addresses for Bitcoin, but on the Lightning network, which is kind of an off chain, and you can stream it in real time. So at this moment, while people are listening to the show, people who are on the Sphinx app, which is the only one that supports everything right now, they're sending 100 Satoshis or less, perhaps, per minute to Dave and I, because we're the hosts of the show, we produce it, but also Sphinx takes 1%, and 1% is going to the podcast index. And that's infinitely dividable, so you can say, I want 5% of this episode to go towards a guy who's doing chapters for us. And so it's kind of a royalty system. It's a real-time payment system. And it's all built on the pledge model, which is similar to donations, except you don't have to pay up front. You pay as you go. You mm-hmm. play and then you pay. So it works whether you have money in your wallet or not. So we're really driving that, so that we can get some real revenue flowing amongst podcast app developers, but also much more reason for hosting companies to be involved, because, you know, now when you have streaming money, you know, there's all kinds of services that can be exchanged for that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, with stuff like that, that really does have to come from customers. Customers have to be saying, hey, we want this thing. And if it's relatively easy to implement, maybe we'd implement it anyway.
It's not. Of course it's not.
I will say that, I mean, I think the funding, donating, whatever you want to call it, pledging money to podcasters themselves, I think that's to make this whole open ecosystem work. That's going to be huge.
Well, we're going to have to, because eventually some of these other pay routes will just get, it'll be too easy to cut it off, you know?
Right.
Hey, I just sent you some clips, Adam.
Yeah, I got them here.
Okay. The thing that gets me about that is that the stream, now everything is, there's a push for streaming ads.
Yeah.
And either streaming ad insertion or dynamic ad insertion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, it's such is a it not work?
Is it not working
experience.
For you, Dave? Is it not?
It's
so,
no,
so the way I understand it, the way I understand it, and maybe John and Justin can do a better job, is you got the streaming ad insertion, which is within Spotify's universe only. And that is, so you can't fast forward, there's a whole bunch of, you're not downloading a file and listening to it on the fly. You're being streamed bits that they predetermine. And the dynamic ad insertion is where they insert it on the way out when you download it, or as you're listening to it, downloading, streaming, to an app outside of, any closed ecosystem. I think that's what it is, the difference.
Yeah.
They should work the same.
Any of those? Are y'all doing any of the dynamic ad insertion?
We had mapped out what we called dynamic content. We'd mapped this out early on, maybe a year and a half ago, and we ultimately shelved it, partly because we're a two-person team, and we have to weigh anything we build.
Yeah.
Like, is this complexity worth it? Because we want the app to stay relatively simple, and we still want to have a relatively good life. We don't want to be maintaining a bunch of complexity.
Yeah, so streaming ads and content, dynamic ads and dynamic content, it just opens up such a can of worms for support. I mean, it would have been a large amount of work to get that to work.
We interviewed Dan Benjamin from Fireside a few weeks ago, and he said that the funny thing is that the customers that he has that are the ones clamoring for dynamic ad insertion are all the ones that are probably going to make very little or no money from it.
Of course.
We've seen this very thing. We've had people say, hey, we're leaving because you don't have dynamic ad insertion. And many times they come back 3, 4, 5 months later because even look at Anchor's ad network. There's very few people making any money on that network. It's just ads. There's a ton of podcasters who want to run ads, and there's not that much supply. So, and there's more big shows than ever. So I don't think ads for the indie creator is the answer.
That's really interesting because Spotify has the inverse. They have jacked up all their advertisers, and they can't convert enough people to listen. So that's why they had to buy Megaphone. Mm. They need to be selling their ads in dynamic ad insertion because they can't fill the orders.
Because of volume, like they need more.
Yeah, they can't. Well, just because you have 300 million people who use your app to listen to music doesn't mean that bringing in Joe Rogan converts everybody to podcasts all of a sudden. they got a little trajectory there. And
yes.
And I'm not so sure it's the same customer.
I don't understand why, like, if you look at SoundCloud's been doing dynamic ad insertion forever for both music and podcasts. They're losing tons of money every year.
Yes, I know.
It's the money losing stuff, that's the
business model.
Look at quarterly reports for any of these companies that have advertising. They're all down right now. So it's not making the big megacorps any money. It's not really making that many podcasters any money. I'm not saying I think ads should be completely done away with, but I think host read ads are better than dynamically inserted ads. And there's other ways for podcasters to make money that aren't dynamically inserted ads.
Yeah.
So, Dave, you had some example of some shitty ads. Is that what we're going to do here? Because I like it.
Oh, yeah. The play clip one. Now, this is not a podcast. This is not from Spotify or anything like that. This is from YouTube. But this video went around yesterday, and somebody texted it to me, and I was watching it, and it's you at this critical moments in the video where this guy's giving testimony in Congress, right as he's about to say something, bam, ad, like halfway through a word. Play clip one.
At that hearing, I hope your testimony will be as impactful today, Dr. Corey.
Senator, thank you, and thank you for holding this hearing. 15 months, U.S. Attorney John Durham has filed the first criminal charge in his investigation.
And yes, it's interesting because I think that that video was actually taken off of Facebook.
Was it taken off Facebook?
Yeah, of a Senate hearing was taken off Facebook.
YouTube was like, hey, screw this. We'll just put ads on it.
Throw ads in it. You'll go away and we'll make some money. Beautiful. Beautiful.
The best one is clip 3, though. Play that one.
August 27th. I want to be clear. I am not here as a politician or a dramatist or sensationalizing what I'm recommending. I'm going to be very clear and very simple. All I ask.
Hey, question for you. You ever seen those people at the coffee shop?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Podcasters who are clamoring for dynamic ad insertion. Do you want your show to sound like that? That's a horrible experience for your customers.
It reminds me so much of early cable when I was at MTV in the mid to late 80s. And, you know, Manhattan, it would be channel, I don't know, 23 or something. Maybe it was a little higher. But at the time, it's like people were laughing at cable. It's like, that's not real television. No one's going to advertise on cable. And because it really was seen as just second-rate dumb. And you'd get these local ads that would be programmed, which was at the time was, you know, a guy in a room with U-matic videotapes and, you know, shoving them in and hitting the machines and switching. So you'd always see like half of a local car dealership, and then it would be boom and go to a jewelry commercial, boom, go back to something else. It was a mess. And it still has those problems.
It doesn't seem terribly intelligent. I mean, it seems like there should be insertion points for some of those commercials. I mean, it's weird that they automatically choose a point and throw it in the middle of someone's speech. And not to mention, on the technical side, it messes up chapters and chapter timing and all that.
Yeah. But that's the thing. This is the slippery slope is first you start with manually choosing your insertion points. And then you're like, wow, the machines can just do this for us. Let's just let the machines choose the insertion points. And then, you know, now you just have machines programming everything for you. It's not good radio.
In the last three months, like if this same thing happens to the podcast platforms like Spotify and those guys, if the same thing happens there that happened on YouTube in the last 3 months, YouTube has become almost unwatchable.
It's three ads at the beginning. It's unstoppable.
It's all over, and it was quick too. I mean, like it went from being sort of tolerable. It was almost like overnight.
Yeah, YouTube has the. I've looked at all of this, Dave. YouTube has the opposite. They have so much advertising. They have the inventory, but they just doubled down. They were doing political ads on children's shows, which is basically ripping the advertiser off because it's not the target market.
I see my daughter, my 10-year-old, she'll watch like those YouTubers that play video games. She'll watch like and it's totally some kid's video game. And she's sitting there watching it. And it's obvious that the target demographic for this thing is like 8 to 12-year-olds. Yeah. And they'll throw up a some kind of pharmaceutical ad. Like, what? Yeah. What? That's just a waste of money.
But the bottom line is that if you don't control the distribution, you can't really control the advertising. And take it from me. I started one of the first podcast networks. I saw that it was not possible to do unless you're going to just create junk. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of problems that comes along with it. And we're trying to keep this open. You know, that's the whole point, is to have it open. It's just not really appropriate for the typical programmatic ads that they're trying to shoehorn it into.
Yeah. I think for the podcasters, especially folks just starting up, I mean, again, we see a lot of patterns with people signing up. Hey, why are you signing up? And, you know, some people just want to try out a show and whatever. But a lot of people are trying to start a business. They're trying to earn some money. And, you know, like right in the United States, I think in 2020, there was three times more businesses started because of the pandemic. Like people are hungry, kind of metaphorically and literally.
Sure.
And I think we could be cynical about that and say, well, they're just never going to make the money. Why even try? I think the attraction to dynamic ad insertion and Anchor and, you know, these things that offer the opportunity for money, like the idea of, oh, there could be some money, is pretty powerful. And what folks need to see is that there are other ways of earning revenue. And I mean, you guys are talking about Lightning again, which I don't really understand, but like John and I have a very simple kind of monthly supporter program for our podcast. And it was basically a show about us building a software business.
Is that the SaaS podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. It's kind of like branded content, and people were excited to support us monthly.
Exactly. Oh yeah. And, oh yeah. No, this is,
and there was moments where the monthly support was making more than the software.
So I'll give you my pitch. When it comes to podcast listening. So with the No Agenda show, we've converted between 3-4% of the entire audience to donate money. Mm. IAB numbers, 100 million Americans listen to a podcast regularly, average 1 hour per day. I think we can convert 1% of that 100 million to give money to a podcast. In fact, a large percentage of that 1% probably already does it through PayPal, Patreon, other ways. Mm-hmm. If you value, and this is where the pitch gets fun, if you value that hour at $1 and everyone's using an app that will send in increments $1 an hour to the podcast they're listening to, that's $1 million a day now that is flowing through podcasting.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great dream.
And that's just the bare minimum.
The problem with your pitch, though, is that you're going to have to get those 100 million people on some sort of app and understanding.
No, only 1 blockchain. Million. Only 1 million. I don't need 100 million. I need 1 million.
Well, that's true. I mean, well, I guess it all depends on how it funnels down. If you're saying that 1 in 10 people are willing to donate, are you saying 1 in 10 are willing to donate but are also like going to have some sort of blockchain?
Just a different app. Just a different app, and you can put money into the app. It's not anything funky. It's just an app. Yeah, it's not. It's nothing special. So you're saying
it doesn't necessarily. It could just be preloading it.
Yeah.
In some way some sort of tokens.
You can load it with money. You can load it with your credit card. It's literally that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's probably more palatable because the way people pay for Patreon right now is I think they go, well, you know, I could probably spend about $40-$45 a month on this, and then they kind of divvy it up. They're like, okay, I'll give this person $1,
this is exactly the same in reverse, where, and I believe there will be apps that you buy with $25 already on it.
Oh yeah.
And then anything you listen to, the payment's automatic, and you can value. You're like, oh, I want this to be a little like $2 a minute. Or this one 50 cents a minute. You can set that individually. All you have to do is either purchase a preloaded app, which you can then top up, or get the app and then either buy with a credit card, or if you have Bitcoin, you can put it in.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is in consumer psychology is it feels like consumers need some sort of brand space or some sort of mental space in their head in order to justify the payment. So as an example, like before, if I came to you guys and said, hey, I'm thinking about building, a consumer product, and I want you to pay me $100 before I build it, and I'm going to go to a bunch of people and do this, folks would be like, nah, like that, that doesn't excite me. But as soon as you have Kickstarter as a thing, it becomes a space in your head of like, oh, well, this is a thing, like people do this. And so then it's like, I'll support a Kickstarter. That becomes normalized. Or Patreon, I want you to donate to me monthly. How many people in early blogs and podcasts tried that and it didn't work? And then all of a sudden you have this Patreon kind of space and habit or whatever it is. And people are like, oh yeah, I'll do that.
Okay. So I'll address that. One, the donation model has been working for a long time, or what we call the value for value model. With just PayPal, people are lazy. So Patreon took away a lot of the issues for people who are lazy and don't want to do administration, which is really software as a service. This is a very, very good idea. Please understand that Patreon has canceled lots of people. So, you know, Patreon is not the end all be all because they literally have canceled people from their accounts. The beauty of podcasting is that it is its own marketing machine. So once there's an app that can scale, so Sphinx app does not scale for the purpose of podcasting the way I'm thinking of it. Yeah. When I say on No Agenda, if I say, hey, check this out, I can guarantee you'll have 10,000 people using the app tomorrow, and they'll figure out how to put money in it. And then when that happens, they will communicate with the other podcasters they listen to and say, hey, you know, you can make money. You can get money while I'm listening to your podcast. Why don't you put this value block into your feed or go to Transistor and they have it all set for you.
Yeah.
That's how the rollout will work.
Yeah. And it just seems... I agree that could possibly work. The thing I'm just noticing is that there's this weird thing with consumer behavior of like, it's just weird to me that, at scale, like Patreon kind of, built monthly donations at scale. They gave it a name and a space, and it happened before, but once there was a name, and there's alternatives to Patreon, right? There's Memberful, there's all sorts of other things, but people have their little Patreon like wallet, you know, it's like, oh, this is my little stash just for Patreon. And they've created space in their life for that thing. And that's kind of my dream for whatever, you know, like the donation namespace that you're talking about. If there was, it's called
the podcast wallet.
Podcast wallet. Maybe that's it. As long as it's as in some sort of mimetic way, listeners adopt at scale this idea of, oh yeah, like normal people like me have a podcast wallet that I put money in every month and support the shows I love. Like that's a normal thing. Everybody's doing it. That seems to always be the tricky part is how do you get this to scale? And part of it might be everyone broadcasting about it. Although, you know, sometimes that doesn't work. I don't know what all the pieces are. There's a bunch of things that have to come together for it to work.
So we have a test environment with just, I think, maybe five podcasts.
And that was nine.
Yeah. And how many people do you about think 50? That are 50?
Yeah, roughly.
So what did we send through in 1 month? $1,000 worth of value was running through these shows?
Yeah.
And that's just the test group. I mean, this is in the station getting ready to go. I mean, once we have an app that that is outbound on the sending part, which is just a technicality, I think it's going to go pretty quick.
It's not something that is it's not something that's easy or as far as, you know, like there's been a lot of plumbing that's gone into it, but then I think I see what you're saying, Justin. I think you're saying that it's more like there's a space for not really a brand, but like a concept word. Where yeah,
Patreon is a concept. That's totally a concept. Yeah. They've become the Xerox of donation. I completely agree.
Yeah. It's mostly a cultural issue.
Sure.
Like how do you get
exactly
do you get the culture to
culture to me is Cash App. This is your next, if not your current podcast listener,
the Venmo Cash App culture.
yeah Venmo Cash App does Bitcoin. You can send Bitcoin, you can load up your podcast wallet with Cash App. Even better if Cash App had a button that said here's your podcast, you know. Yeah. they could do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
How many of y'all's customers do you think are trying to, or are podcasting just because they,
right, just because they want to.
Just for fun, and versus how many are, do you think, are like trying to make money?
Oh man. I mean, I don't think anyone, any of the indie shows would turn down somebody supporting their show. Like if but actively seeking it, I mean, qualitatively, maybe 25-30%.
See, that makes me happy. That makes me happy to hear, because I'm like, you want podcast. We all want podcasting to be an ecosystem that's monetizable and people can make money from it. But one of the things that makes it beautiful is that there's also this very large percent of people who podcast just because they enjoy it and it's fun, and they really don't ever care about making money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's one of the reasons, like, we have you pay a subscription, but you can start multiple shows on a subscription.
Oh, that's nice.
And so the whole idea was, once I started podcasting, I was like, whoa, I want to sunset this show and start something else. I want to create a 5-episode series, and then to have to go in and pay every time I wanted to flex my creativity was like, just not, you know. There's a lot of people that just do it for fun. And I mean, those are our favorite customers. The people that, you know, are just like, the people that are actually less fun are the people that are really trying to optimize their stats. Yeah, and like, yeah, it's like John sometimes gets, you know, folks that are like, how come my download stats on Transistor are too off what I'm seeing in Apple podcast stats?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I know I had a listener from Denmark, but they're not showing up. Well, I don't know how to track that one down exactly for you, but.
Yeah, there was a whole episode of Buzzcast recently where those guys were talking about some stats that all of a sudden showed up from like some obscure town in Washington.
Oh yeah, what was the reason behind that? Was some proxy server or something?
It was like something, or all maybe some sort of like IP address geolocation errors or something like that. But it's like, you know, people get so worked up about, oh my God, I had 100 listeners last week.
My favorite story. When this is in 1994 or 5, somewhere around there, and I built, my company was building planetreebok.com for Reebok. And back then, you know, stats, now we have stats, we'll grep the log for you. And somehow that got communicated through an account person to the client, and the client was like, holy crap, we got like 5 million people looking at us this past month. Of course, these were hits. These were server entries, you know, like every image on the page, everything was a log entry. And then you got stuck. It's like, holy crap, how do we tell this person? It was probably a fraction of that. And we're like, nah, fuck it, let them think whatever. They did a press release already.
That was the golden age of the web. Is you just had a hit counter.
That's all you needed. You just needed a hit counter.
And then 1999, we miss you.
Yeah. It is frustrating. But on the one hand, like, I get it. I mean, it's, you know, they're small-time podcasters. They just want. They want an audience, and they want to know.
Well, everybody wants the feedback, and this is why I'm pushing so hard. Here, where podcasting gets its ass kicked is in the real-time comments that people, do on YouTube. One is streaming live, and even if you go back, you see the chat scroll by, you know, of what passed. But really, just the comments itself is a huge feature of what YouTube offers. And, you know, this idea of super chat, where I throw you $5 or $10, all of that can be done with the technology that we're looking at and implementing. And that's where it has to come from. And I think that is just the idea that you have almost like the hearts being thrown at you in a Periscope or an Instagram Live. That's the kind of stuff that audiences thrive on. That's how they can participate, be a part of it.
All the big podcasts have chat rooms.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
sure.
No Agenda does, but sure. Accidental Tech. I mean, once you get to a certain size, you know, they all want chat rooms because everybody, that's where all the love happens.
I would love to have every single podcast app that I use that it would just log into our IRC chat room. Boom. Mm-hmm. Just sit on the app and troll along while you're listening with other people. And, you know, even better if it's synchronized, but I see that experience. We've been experiencing it for a couple months now with the Sphinx chat. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. People dig that.
I mean, I think the difference though between podcasting and obviously YouTube is your eyeballs are not on a thing all the time, right? Like my phone's in my pocket and I'm walking around.
Yeah, but even audio, people will do this on YouTube just in audio shows. It's crazy how deeply ingrained that. Here's a question though. Are you guys looking at some different types of compression, et cetera, for people who want to do video podcasts? Because obviously the problem with video podcasts is file size, transfer costs, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you been looking at that?
We haven't yet.
John should take this. Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't yet. I mean, there's a number of ways to do it, but.
I mean, right now is the time, man. People are looking for an alternative.
Yeah.
Yeah, the uproar of them removing all the Joe Rogan videos off YouTube has been huge,
man. Especially about the comments.
Yeah. And even you think about going back to something you were saying, Adam, if I could tap my AirPods when somebody says something that I like and it rings the metaphorical bell and gives them a little donation or a little feedback or something, that would be an incredible audio experience. And audio first, right? I'm walking around, AirPods are on, and there's a way to, of course, right, Apple would have to agree to this, but there's a way of me interacting with, hey, let me ring the bell right now and give them some feedback. Like, I liked that joke, or that was a good point, or
yeah,
I want to send you a little money.
Yeah, we have this actually, it's integrated already. It's called a boost. And so you can boost, and it's an amount of Satoshis, which by itself is part of the game, is, you know, come up with a cool number, like I'll boost 404. Dave, I think, is doing 133 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as a podcaster, when you go back, you can, you know, see all the boosts on the timeline. You can scroll through it and see where people were, as you would say, were ringing the bell.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Cool. So that's
implemented. You'll be listening, and all of a sudden you'll have like this string of 20 boosts that come through, and you're like, oh, so I don't know what just happened, but something happened, you know.
Exactly.
Somebody said something. Yeah,
it's a cool idea. I mean, I'll have to look and kind of read up on what you guys have been doing. It seems like there's a lot of pieces that need to.
Yeah, we got to get you in the test group so you can
together,
see it.
As long as whatever ends up being is easy to use for customers and podcasters and platforms, at least.
Yeah. Well, that's your job. We got all the complicated shit to do. You make it easy. To hell, man.
It's like, have fun, John.
Really? Put that
There's
on our shoulders.
There's documentation somewhere.
Shoulders.
What do you think y'all will, what is the next part of the namespace that y'all think you will work on?
I mean, I think having a spot for people to upload transcripts is, that's a natural one. People have wanted that for a while. So yeah, I think transcripts is, and I don't think it's that hard, even if we just started with like, you can upload an SRT file or something like that.
Yeah.
John, are you going to let him get away with saying what's hard and what's not?
right.
How hard can it be?
Yeah. You just copy and paste a block of text. Probably transcripts. I mean, chapters are a little, we don't support those directly. I mean, those are tough because it does tie into the actual MP3.
The chapter
tags themselves, the chapter tags.
No,
we have different chapters now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a JSON file. Right. It's an external JSON file, and you just put a chapters element in there and then a URL to the JSON file, and you're done.
And here's what's cool about it. If you think of something that your customers might like, because this is part of this podcasting 2.0 where you're part of the band or you're in the band, I have community chapters. So this JSON file with the chapters is external. It's referenced in the RSS feed. And Hypercatcher, which is an iOS app, they have a simple way for anybody to just tap it and say, oh, hold on a second. I want to place a chapter here. And then there's a back end. As a podcaster, I can approve those links. I can add a picture to it. You know, there's a few other things you can do, which will start expanding. So now people can start submitting, very much like a timeline on SoundCloud. You can submit either a comment or a chapter marker or a URL link. And in my case, I just use the API, there's an API endpoint for each episode. And I just use that. And whenever a 2.0 app comes along and it finds the chapters, it just puts them right in right away. And it updates on the fly.
Yeah. That is cool. I think chapters is a cool. I'm also really excited about sand bites.
It's kind of the same thing as we figured out.
Yeah. Sound bites is an interesting one because in the discovery, like if podcasts have a discovery problem or whatever, the problem is that you get to Apple Podcasts and then there's 200 episodes that are all 2 hours long. It's like, well, how do I get a quick sense of what this episode was about or what this
man, you whatever want was about? You want cast coverage. Have you tried that app yet?
No.
Cast coverage gives you, this is the craziest fucking app in the world. It gives you, you fire it up and it just grabs a random podcast, dumps you in a place in the file randomly. So you can listen to it, and then you don't like it, hit the next one. It's perfect for finding shit.
Yes.
It's the scan button on the FM radio.
Right. Yeah, and it should be using sound bites. Now it's just taking something at random, but think about how cool it will be with sound bites for discoverability.
Podverse, too. You know, Podverse is all about sound bites. Is it Podverse.fm?
Yes, Podverse.fm, yep.
Yeah, and basically just as community sound bites, and people are doing it, and it publishes it back out in the chapters in the chapters format.
Yeah, we'll have to look into the chapter stuff. I mean, it's. I think it has to be sort of seamless for the customer, and I don't know if we'd want people editing tables of chapter data. If we can pull the chapters right out of the MP3 if they already had it, that's obviously better.
Ooh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what some hosters are doing. You pull it in and then you just scan the frame headers and pull the ID3 stuff out and build the JSON out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we did the JSON is because MP3 embedded chapters are just, they've never taken off.
Right.
And I'm not going to say it's difficult, but most people are uploading their MP3 to the host. And they're not going to sit there and go through there and use an editing tool to do that sort of information. Yeah, they're going to upload it to the host. And then once you have it, you really don't want to do a bunch of re-encoding and that sort of thing. I mean,
but see, y'all, I just want to say, you technical boys, don't miss the point here of the community aspect. So when you're baking it into your file, you know, that's one way only, and people only get to see that as bookmarks or whatever you want to call them. When you get the audience out there who can say, oh, shit, this is a great joke. I want to mark this here, or I want to put a funny picture here, or want to link to something. Now you're cooking with gas because that's what people want. They want to participate.
Chapters go both ways. It's not just like one direction.
No, because you can have as long as you have an interface for other people to edit the JSON. Which still has a back end for approval. So, you know, people aren't putting porn in there, although very appropriate in this show. Then I can, approve it. And it's all rudimentary. I mean, it's basically just a list of start times, URL, image URL. That's it. So,
yeah.
And it's just a each time you add a chapter, it's just a row is added to the interface. So it's, and then it spits out the JSON on the other end. But that's what makes it cool is that anyone can edit it. And I want this to be cross app if it could be. So, you know, I want someone on one app to be able to do something on a chapter and then someone else can add their own. And before you know it, you got comments. You know, this could move quite quickly this way.
Yeah. Or even the thing I thought about is we realized that the reason people supported us monthly for our show, because we had all these tiers and stuff and, you know, benefits. What they wanted was the shout out at the end of the show.
Exactly.
And we have this big, long list of people.
Yep.
And they want the shout out. That's what they want. And so now imagine if you get the shout out, but then you're one of the supporters. You can take a picture of yourself and send it back. And now you appear in the chapter artwork, right? It's like,
I like that. That's a good idea.
Here's Dave Junta.
There you go. Speaking of which, Dave, let's thank our three people.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
For our value, if you don't mind for a second here, John and Justin, we are.
Oh, no.
We
planned that transition perfectly.
Yes, we do our value for value. whatever value you get out of this project, as we are pushing podcasting forward, we're in it to make it work for everybody. And the only way to keep the machines humming is through the charity of Dave and myself, a cast of thousands, and your actual financial donations. We look at the three T's: time, talent, and treasure. Who do we thank today, Dave?
Well, the first one is not an actual donation. It's more of, well, it is a donation, but it's not just a money donation. It's thanking Ben and Alberto at RSS.com, because they sponsored on our behalf for Pod News to brand their tech section of the newsletter with Podcast Index.
That was really nice. And it was. That's a nice little blurb we got.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a significant piece of placement. Yeah, really appreciated that. That's incredibly valuable. That brings people over. Really appreciate that, guys.
I've talked to Ben a few times over the last couple of months, and he's just a top-notch guy. Great.
Very cool.
Yeah, and he really wanted to do that for us. So that's, I don't know how to value that, but I'm sure it's not cheap, and we really appreciate that, guys. We have a automatic payment, a new subscription.
Oh, from very nice.
Joseph Maraca, $5 a month, and I could not find a note from Joseph. But
thank you, Joseph. It's appreciated. It's value. That's all we care about.
And we also got a one-time donation of $7 from Earl Hamilton.
Perfect.
And again, no note. Uh-huh. So that took a really long time.
Well, we appreciate any support we get. And obviously we thank all of the developers and people who are on podcastindex.social who are hanging out, adding their 2 cents, thinking about stuff, writing stuff, helping with the namespace, with specs, sometimes just making us all laugh. It's a lot of fun, and it really throws back to what we were talking about. The early days of podcasting. A lot of that spirit is alive and well, rejuvenated. It's really nice to see how everyone is coming together and making this work. And it's independence, but I think at 40 or 50% of the market outside of Apple and Spotify, we're doing pretty darn good. And you can support us. Again, your time, your talent, your treasure, go to podcastindex.org. At the bottom is a big red donate button. Or if you have a Sphinx app or you got some Lightning payments, there's a QR code. You can support us there. And thanks again. It's really appreciated.
I know John and Justin both personally promised to me that they would donate $1,000 each. So that's... Isn't that right, guys? That's right. Didn't I get those numbers right? I'll just go ahead and take that right after the show.
Yeah.
That's how we fund it, boys. That's how we fund it.
Extortion. I see.
I like it. It's the new model.
I will add about the community aspect of this. I'm in a Slack channel for the open podcast analytics group, and there is a channel in there for indie podcasting host companies, and like everyone is really friendly and open to talking about stuff and sharing ideas. So like,
cool.
It's really cool to see that. I know everyone is a little bit worried about Spotify and all these other mega companies.
Oh, we're here to fight that, man. That's what we're doing here. Fighting.
Everyone's on board. I think everyone is definitely good, in the same spot. So
all we need is better features. Eventually they're going to redo their app and it will be much better. But think about, I personally don't know if their purchases they've made, if they're going to be on the same development train. They put all their resources into streaming ad insertion and tracking and getting all that stuff done. But, as we know, there's these little things like, the 1.2, 1.5 times speed, being able to share something, be able to clip something. There's all these little features that they're going to have to catch up on. We have, I think, 18-month head start. And if we really push, they'll never really get off the ground.
What's your feeling about Apple in all this case? Because they've been kind of the benevolent, I don't know, but they hold a lot of the balance of power right now.
Bull crap.
You don't think so?
No, they don't. They're in irons right now, to use the nautical term. So they are, of course, contemplating doing a podcasting plus, a podcast plus, which will be, you know, talent and news, etc., which is a burgeoning business for Apple. I don't think it's, I mean, they have to do it, I think. I don't think they're particularly great at it. They curate very kind of middle of the road, very safe. That's not really what people are looking for anymore. They want to be able to explore the unsafe stuff. On the other hand, they're totally stagnant with podcasting, and I've been kicking them. I'm saying, look, I, you know, whatever you do, I would suggest adopting to the new features that are coming out if you want to really play both sides of the fence against Spotify. Mm-hmm. You're already under 50% market share, according to the numbers, whatever it means. So, yeah, go ahead and compete if you really think that, you know, the offering you can put together is going to be worth some type of subscription. Where, again, you know, we're going exactly the opposite. And eventually, all these streaming channels on television or your Roku and all these apps, someone is going to have to come up with the universal way to do that, because you can't have a $300 bill and only listen to a couple of shows or watch a couple of TV shows on every different app. It's just, it's very arrogant. We have five Joe Rogans outside of these places. And their audiences are so powerful that when Michelle Obama's podcast couldn't get the audience that they had sold to the advertisers, all of a sudden it was no longer just an exclusive to Spotify. It's on every podcast app everywhere because they can't get the audience. Who has the audience? We have the audience.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. But in terms of like actual listening apps, Apple is still, outside of Spotify, Apple still has most of that market share. And I'm guessing a lot of people are still, like, when they discover podcasts for the first time, they're not downloading Overcast. They're most normals, quote unquote, are, you know, they use the Apple Podcast app, I'm guessing.
Well, the Apple Podcast app stats for percentage of downloads has been
dwindling.
It's been steadily going down. And I think if you go back 10 years ago, you would have never convinced anybody that Internet Explorer was not going to be the dominant browser, and that your grandmother would go out and download a copy of Chrome onto her computer. You would say, well, just the thing that it comes with is the thing that everybody's going to use. But the power of word of mouth, it got to the point where people were saying, it became known amongst everybody that Internet Explorer sucks. You need a better browser, go download Chrome. And it just became this thing that everybody knows. And I think that's happening in podcasting too. It's not that the Apple Podcast app is bad. It's just that people are saying these other, like, I'm using Overcast most of the time, unless I'm listening to Sphinx. But whenever somebody asks me, what should I listen to? I'll just tell them, go get Overcast. And I think that replicates out. And I think it's having an overall aggregate effect.
And also, don't get stuck in the kind of what I call the hoster's dilemma. And that's what's been going on for a decade as well. You know, is Apple going to support it? So now we have 15 apps that support these new features. When I say to someone, hey, we have a pretty big audience. If I say, go get Hypercatcher, you know, servers get overloaded because people are getting Hypercatcher. And why are they getting it? Because it has features they like. They can do something with it. If I say, check out this episode, I almost now instinctively send them to a PodFriend link because it's a web player. It comes up fast. It works fast. It has all the features in there. And people are often blown away. It's like, oh, really? It's not. It's a big step for someone to switch apps, for someone who's really, really dedicated to it. And you'll see a lot of people, you know, Pocket Cast, you know, very dedicated. Podcast Addict, extremely dedicated. So instead of getting people to switch their apps, the ones they like now, we have features that these app developers can upgrade to. And Apple, if they don't, what is NPR going to do? They want seasons the way your customers want seasons. Eventually, there's going to be enough apps to support seasons that NPR will say, hey, if you want to find our seasons, use, you know, podverse.fm. They will. They will do that. Now, I've been around long enough to see it happen. So just like Dave is saying, this idea that it's all over. No, the browser wars was totally driven by features. Totally. It was all about the features. And it still is.
And, yeah. And developers, and now
developers, thank you. You know, Microsoft is now trying to capture some of that back. And you know, I think they've gone totally overboard, where now the browser just runs and sucks out your life and data full time without even open. But yeah, it's going to come down to features, and people have been wanting these because every other platform has this. Every other platform you can interact, and so podcasting needs to get it. And let's see if Spotify does anything like that. I don't think so. It's not their purview right now.
Yeah, I mean, my preference would be for Apple to adopt this stuff, because it would be nice if, you know, outside of Spotify has already said, you know, their path is clear, but all these other players that support RSS feeds, my preference would be like, yeah, let's use the podcast index stuff. When we first started, I was like, what's going on with RSS? Like, where's the RSS working group and all that? And that's a, you know, I don't know. Do you guys ever talk to those? Is that even a thing anymore?
I was a founding member of the RSS board. It's a piece of crap. It's like nothing. It's like people running around talking stuff for 10 years doing nothing.
Yeah. So this seems to be the best approach, is to say, let's enhance RSS through a new open protocol. I'm totally on board with that. My dream would be for Apple to adopt it. And then, yeah, we don't have, because you're right. The only innovation we've had in the last 5-10 years has been when Apple announces new tags.
And so this is the problem. And this is part of why we started the index. Podcast app developers have never been in the deal flow. There's been no money for them. So what's the incentive to create a great app? And beside that, in order to create a great app, you need endpoints, you need an API that is expandable, you need someone on the other end of the API to create the features that you need. So we provided that, and now we have apps that never existed before. So the longer Apple waits, the more market share we're going to take from them.
Yeah.
And that's the way I see it. And
maybe that's the hedge too, is if they want to maintain some space in podcasting, they are competing against Spotify. Then maybe that's the hedge, as you say, like, listen, like, podcasting is moving on and we need, people are demanding these features, just adopt them. And then you've got a big advantage over your competition.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly right. Because you think, my dream of how this plays out is that Apple currently has the iTunes namespace, of which is, you know, mostly a standard, but the iTunes brand isn't even a thing anymore. I mean, that iTunes doesn't really even exist.
Now, Dave, remember, name doesn't mean anything. Tisk, tisk, tisk.
People still refer to it as iTunes, though.
Tisk, tisk, tisk.
I don't know what you're talking about. the iTunes namespace refers to a product that doesn't exist. But so really what you could do, and this is my dreaming here, really what Apple could do is they could look at the podcast namespace, and they could just merge the podcast namespace in with iTunes and just call it podcast.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
The iTunes branding isn't giving them anything anymore. And so this could be an industry-wide change.
That's a great idea. That would be fantastic. So just merge it in. Nice.
Yeah, there would be no breakage. I think everything would just roll.
It's going to take a lot of pressure. I mean, I think as a group, you know, between smaller hosts like us and people like you guys, like, it's going to take a group effort to really, I think, pressure Apple. Maybe there's some campaign we can do all at the same time to just bombard them with emails and tell them everyone's asking for this stuff.
Well, that's actually not necessary, because they're quite aware of what we're doing.
Okay. They are.
They're very aware. I'm presenting the namespace to them in January. I'm going to give them shit. Yeah.
It may not take as much pressure as we think.
I don't think so either. I mean, I think I'm going to lay my case out before them. It's It's like
the timing is interesting.
Why even compete with Spotify? That's fine if you want to do that. You know, it'll be, is Apple TV Plus really competing with other things? Is it really?
Yeah, well, Adam, you said, you know, a couple of months ago that you think that Joe Rogan will be coming back, you know, outside of the ecosystem as well, that they'll have to open that thing back up.
Yeah, and I think so too. I think they're going to have a real problem getting the numbers that they wanted to get. Absolutely.
Based on what I've seen already, his audience reaction, that's a very likely scenario. I mean, and if that happens, that tells me everything I need to know about people's, about whether it's going to be successful to capture exclusive content and that be your business model.
See, and that's the mistake that they're making. It's the mistake that Apple's making, is the idea, and Spotify is the idea that the success lies with the podcaster. Success is with the audience, and the audience is all over the place. And by the way, Spotify may come for the podcast apps next. They may start buying people. I don't put that beyond them at all. So make sure you got all your damn features integrated before you become a millionaire, you damn developers.
Does Transistor have an app? Do y'all have an actual app? Or is y'all just do hosting?
No, we don't.
Yeah, okay. Just hosting. We really want things to be as simple. That's the beautiful part about an open system, is that you can provide one part of the value chain and then let other folks do what they're good at.
Totally.
So as a two-person company, we can, you know, have a good business and have a good life and serve our customers and go home and eat dinner with the fam, you know? Our preference is that to encourage the overall ecosystem, have, you know, we have an API, we want other folks to build stuff on top of what we've got, or build stuff on top of just podcasting in general.
By the way, can I view source your API documentation and just steal all of your styles and all that stuff? Because our API documentation looks like garbage.
You should look into, beautiful. Tailwind CSS is what we've been using for all of our stuff.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, because I was looking at your API about a week ago, and I was like, man, this documentation is so pretty. And ours looks like a dump. Ours looks like a dumpster fire.
All right. Now we're down into nerd stuff. Your docs look pretty, baby. Yeah.
Well, Pornhub got defunded, so I got to do something.
Justin and John, transistor.fm, really appreciate the work you guys are doing in the podcasting. Oh, I'm going to say it. In the podcasting space. It's super important. We support everybody who is out there making it happen, who is independent. And really appreciate you guys taking the time to share your thoughts with us today.
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah, we really, really appreciate what you guys are doing, too, to push things forward.
Well, yeah, I want to say thanks, too, because y'all were y'all were very early to integrate with the auto submission to the index. I think y'all implemented that maybe like 2 or 3 weeks after we launched Podcast Index. So,
it's right in the UI. People can click a button right when after they submit to Apple, they click a button and automatically submit it to the index. Pretty cool.
Yeah, we really appreciate y'all jumping on board. That was great.
And we'll get you into one of these tests with some of the pledge model apps. I think you'll enjoy seeing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll show you the future. The future is podcasting 2.0, ladies and gentlemen. Dave, anything else I can do for you? What do you need?
Oh, the day job has been hectic this week. I need coffee and a good book.
All right, everybody, we are building the future of podcasting 2.0. Dave, we'll do another board meeting next Friday, my friend.
All right, see you, bro.
All right, everybody. And make sure you support us if you feel like it. Time, talent, or treasure at podcastindex.org, podcastindex.social. See you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.